Bhagavatam, we're reading from the 9th canto, chapter 10. I think Banabhata Prabhu finished with verse 16, so we'll read 17, 18, 19, and then do the Sanskrit for 20. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Gaur Gurudev Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nasta Bhayeshu Rupabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Nishtaki. By regular attendance in the classes in the Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So I'll just read the 17, 18, 19. Translation. After entering Lanka, the monkey soldiers, led by chiefs like Sugriva, Nila, and Hanuman, occupied all the sporting houses, granaries, treasuries, palace doorways, city gates, assembly houses, palace frontages, and even the resting houses of the pigeons. When the city's crossroads, platforms, flags, and golden water pots on its domes were all destroyed, the entire city of Lanka appeared like a river disturbed by a herd of elephants. Text 18. When Ravana, the master of the Rakshasas, saw the disturbances created by the monkey soldiers, he called for Aninkumba, Kumba, Dumraksha, Durmukha, Sarantaka, Narantaka, and other Rakshasas, and also his son Indrajit. Thereafter he called for Prahasta, Atikaya, Vikampana, and finally Kumbhakarna. Then he induced all of his followers to fight against the enemies. Text 19. Lord Ramachandra, surrounded by Lakshman and monkey soldiers like Sugriva, Hanuman, Kandhamda, Gandamada, Nila, Angada, Jambavan, Panasa attacked the soldiers of the Rakshasas, who were fully equipped with various inconceivable weapons like swords, lances, bows, prasas, ristas, shakti arrows, kadgas, and tamaras. Text 20. Te Nikapa Ragupater Haripatya Sarve Tandvam Varutam Ibha Pati Ratasva Rodai Jagnur Drumar Giri Kadeshubir Angadaya Sita Vimarsha Hata Mangala Ravaneshan. Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Dandam varutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Jagnur drumayar giri gade shubir angadaya. Sita bimarshahata mangala ravanesham. Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Nandvam varutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Jagnur drumaya giri gade shubir angadaya. Sita bimarshahata mangala ravanesham. Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Tandam varutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Jagnur drumaya giri gade shubir angadaya. Sita bimarshahata mangala ravanesham. Teni pakata ragupati rabhyatya sarve. Tandvam radutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Nirduma giri gade subir angadadya. Sita bimarshahata. Ravanesham Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Tandam varutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Yagnir drumar giri gade shubhut angadadya. Sita maha sahata mangala avesham. Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Dandam varutam ipapati ratasya rudyai. Yagnir rumogir ikadesu gayagna dadyam. Sita bimarshahata mangala bhavanesham. Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Tandvam varutam ipapati ratasva yodhai. Jagnir dhuma giri gade shubir agradya. Sita bimarshahata mangala ravanesham. Teni kapara gupater abhipatya sarve. Tandvam varutam ivapati ratashva yodhai. Jagnir drumur girigade shubir angadaya. Sita bimarshahata mangala ravanesham. Ladies? Teni kapara gupater adipatya sarve. Chandam Bharutam Ipapati Ratasya Vyodai Dhagnur Drumar Giri Vedeshu Vir Agvanjadya Sita Vimarsha Hata Mangalam Ravanesham. Te, all of them, Anikapa, the commanders of the soldiers, Raghupate, of Lord Sri Ramachandra, Abhipatya, chasing the enemy, Sarve, all of them, Dandvam, fighting, Vrutam, the soldiers of Ravana, Bibha, by elephants, Pati, by infantry, Ratha, by chariots, Ashva, by horses, Yodhai, by such warriors, Jagnu, killed them, Drumai, by throwing big trees, Giri, by peaks of mountains, Gada, by clubs, Ishubi, by arrows, Angada Adya, all the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra, headed by Angada and others. Sita, of Mother Sita, Abhimarsha, by the anger, Hata, had been condemned, Mangala, whose auspiciousness, Ravana Ishan, the followers or dependents of Ravana. Translation: Angada and the other commanders of the soldiers of Ramachandra faced the elephants, infantry, horses, and chariots of the enemy and hurled against them big trees, mountain peaks, clubs, and arrows. Thus the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana's soldiers, who had lost all good fortune because Ravana had been condemned by the anger of Mother Sita. Please repeat. Angada and the other commanders of the soldiers of Ramachandra faced the elephants, infantry, horses, and chariots of the enemy and hurled against them big trees, mountain peaks, clubs, and arrows. Thus the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana's soldiers, who had lost all good fortune because Ravana had been condemned by the anger of Mother Sita. Purport by the Divine Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The soldiers Lord Ramachandra recruited in the jungle were all monkeys and did not have proper equipment with which to fight the soldiers of Ravana. For Ravana's soldiers were equipped with the weapons of modern warfare, whereas the monkeys could only throw stones, mountain peaks, and trees. It was only Lord Ramachandra and Lakshman who shot some arrows. But because the soldiers of Ravana were condemned by the curse of Mother Sita, the monkeys were able to kill them simply by throwing stones and trees. There are two kinds of strength, Daiva and Purushakara. Daiva refers to strength achieved from transcendence. And Purushakara refers to the strength organized by one's own intelligence and power. Transcendental power is always superior to the power of the materialist. Depending on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one must fight one's enemies even though one may not be equipped with modern weapons. Therefore, Krishna instructed Arjuna, Mam Anushmara Yudhyacha, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, text 7. Think of me and fight. We should fight our enemy to the best of our ability, but for the victory, we must depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshrum Vinditam Jina Tasme Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stafitam Dina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svaparantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Siyuta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavansha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vidham Tam Sujivam Sadaitam Sabhutam Purjana Sahitam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Shiva Shakam Vitangsha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandha Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Brindamaneshwari Vrishabhana Sate Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Panchakaupatarubhyascha Kripasanduve Vachapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Garadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Angada and the other commanders of the soldiers of Ramachandra faced the elephants, infantry, horses, and chariots of the enemy and hurled against them big trees, mountain peaks, clubs, and arrows. Thus the soldiers of Lord Ramachandra killed Ravana's soldiers, who had lost all good fortune because Ravana had been condemned by the anger of Mother Sita. So Bhagavad Gita informs us that for any action, there are five factors that are required for that action to be completed, which is the place, the person, the senses that are involved, the endeavor itself, and ultimately the Supreme Lord, or the Supersoul. So for the potency for any action to be completed depends ultimately on the mercy of the Lord. For the materialist, who is depending on what's described here as Purushakara, is depending on his own intelligence and his own plots and plans, thinking him to be the supreme controller, and thinking by his own efforts everything will be done. So this is also referred to in Bhagavad Gita. Prakriti kriyamana ni gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of nature, thinks himself the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by nature. So the ability to do anything is granted by the Supreme Lord. This is from the smallest thing to the largest thing. And a devotee, in his humility, calls on the Lord for his help, and the Lord carries what he has and preserves, carries what he lacks, preserves what he had. So Lord Ramachandra recruited this monkey army and was ultimately victorious, empowering the sincere followers. So in the same way, our Srila Prabhupada also took an army of various types of, we would probably refer to ourselves as monkeys and bears, and a very ragtag army to fight, actually, to Kali, the influence of Kali Yuga. And by the influence and mercy of the pure devotee, amazing victories have taken place. Because the Lord actually empowers the devotee to do his service. In this verse, Prabhupada also refers to the Bhagavad Gita verse that one should simply fight and think of me and depend on the mercy of the Lord. So we can do our best, but ultimately, as it says in the last verse of this purport, we have to fight and do our duty, but ultimately for victory we have to depend on the Supreme Lord. The devotee simply does his duty, trying to do his best, and leaves the result to Krishna. But he understands, we can understand from Brahma Samhita, there's two nice verses at the end of Brahma Samhita, how actually everything good and bad, supposedly good and bad, is sanctioned or empowered by the Lord. In the 53rd verse in Brahma Samhita, it said, Dharmo tapapanachaya shuti astapangsmi Rama adikita patagaba diyascha jiva Yadatta matra vivava prakata brabhava Govindamari purushantamaham bhajani. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power maintained the manifested potencies that are found to exist. Of all virtues, of all vices, the Vedas, the penances, of all jivas, from Brahma down to the meanest insect. So any power that anyone has is actually conferred by the Lord. This is also, this next verse is also very nice, which describes Yastunda Gopa Matavendra Mahosakarma Vandhana Rupa Vajana Palamatanati Haramani Nirdhati Kintusha Bhakti Vajam Govinda Maripurishang Tamaham Bhajami. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to their roots the fruit activities all those who are imbued with devotion, and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's action. Of all those who walk in the path of work in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indra Gopa than that of Indra, the king of the devas. So it's mentioned in this Bhagavatam verse how the soldiers of Ravan were actually condemned. They had lost all of their potency. They had lost all of their potency due to the offense against Sita Deva, Devi. And Prabhupada describes also that just like if one goes to the heaven, the Bhagavad Gita describes, if one goes to the heavenly planets due to his pious activities, as soon as those pious activities run out, one falls again back to this material world, back to square one. So it's compared also as if one creates some offense, if some offends a devotee, offends the Lord, then immediately all the pious activities he's accumulated are dropped to zero. And again, back to square one. So whatever potency one has, whatever modern weapons that were used by the soldiers of Ravana, they actually lost all of their potency. They had no effect because of the offense that was offense against Sita Devi. So things can shift very quickly. That whatever power one has is granted by the Lord and also can be withdrawn by the Lord. So a devotee is always giving credit to his spiritual master, to the other devotees, and thinking himself lower than the straw on the street, more humble than a blade of grass, and trying to tolerate all offenses and offer respect to everyone and not receive any respect himself. This is Lord Chaitanya's prayer, of course. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name constantly. So it's a very good practice for us. I mean, these eight essential prayers of Lord Chaitanya, of being actually able to see the good in everyone. Prabhupada would do this, even his disciples and even non-disciples. He would see a little bit of good and fan that good propensity and be able to encourage that person. This is a very wonderful quality Prabhupada had, that all of us are created with some special talent. Everyone is created individually. And Krishna creates a variety of jiva souls with a variety of talents, unique talents, to increase his own pleasure. So we have to recognize within everyone and within ourselves that everyone has something special to offer. And by offering that, whether one is a pujari, one is a cook, one is washing pots, we have very sincere, nice pot washers here. This is all on the absolute platform, and I'm always very happy to see how enthusiastic and motivated that all the devotees are from whatever service they're performing, because this is all on the transcendental plane. There's no higher or lower on the transcendental plane. So Prabhupada was able to encourage everyone. Sarabhi Prabhu, when he was here talking at the Prabhupada festival, he was giving his realization how Prabhupada, he asked him, he actually came to India, you may know the story, he came to India after he had some contact with the devotees, but it wasn't that extensive. So he came to India kind of in the mood of the people of those days, just wanting to further his realization and glean knowledge from the treasure of Eastern knowledge. So somehow he came to the devotees, and Prabhupada engaged him right away. And although he was an architect, and he was an artist. He wasn't really an architect. He never built a building, but he was a very creative person and was able to draw. Prabhupada gave him an idea of what he wanted for the Vrindavan temple. And then he said, then Prabhupada just let me develop my service. With that inspiration, he started doing the drawings, and he was actually assigned to be the architect and take on this great service of building this temple. But he said, Prabhupada gave me a lot of leeway. He advised me, and then he let the creativity in me come out. And he said, Bombay temple was a different story because he had very specific things he wanted. But for Vrindavan, he said, I want to make this nice. I want to make this actually a home for the Western devotees to come and to do their seva and to feel comfortable. So he wanted to have a very international flavor. And so he said, so Sarabhi Prabhu said that as time went on, he would guide me, but he was very open with giving me inspiration to be creative. And I think that's Prabhupada's model with everyone, is that, again, everyone has a special talent, and to recognize that and to appreciate that and to understand it's a very personal, the spiritual progress and spiritual journey is a very personal thing. The general rules are there for everyone, but everyone actually has their own specific rasa with Krishna and guru. And try and develop what they can do best is something that has to be recognized and encouraged. That we encourage people to do what they can do best, and that's the beginning of spiritual life, to engage your natural propensities in Krishna's service. That what can repression accomplish, and then over the course of time, one naturally is more motivated by his desire to please Guru and Krishna than just catering to his own natural, because whatever our natural inclinations are, they're somewhat created from our past activities. So if we're more of the mentality of a Brahmin, Shudra, Vaishya, whatever, those are the karma we happen to have landed in this lifetime, but they're not our eternal identity. Our eternal identity is Jivara Swarupoi Nitya Krishna Das, is everyone is a servant of the Supreme. And as soon as we think that we're something other than a servant of the Supreme, we give ourselves some other designation, then we're just subject to illusion. We may think that we're not American, we're not Indian, we're not Hindu, we're not Christian, we're not Jew, we're not black, we're not white, we're not this body, we're not male, we're not female. We're eternally Krishna's servant. That's our real identity. And this goes beyond even the Varnashram conception. I wanted to read a letter that was, I can find it here. This was written to Gopal Krishna Maharaj, actually, in 1971. And it kind of kind of relates also to this this verse we just read. And I know that the disciples of Gopal Krishna Maharaj are celebrating his Vyas Puja today, and I think they're sponsoring the breakfast. And our great god brother Gopal Krishna has done so much service in India and all over the world. But when he first joined the movement, he was working in Canada. So let me just find this other verse first. So on April 4th, 1971, Srila Prabhupada wrote to Gopal Krishna, "So far as your working engagement is concerned, certainly you are not a karmi. Any person whose constant occupation is Krishna consciousness, he is not a karmi. He is a devotee in all circumstances. You should accept the best source of monetary income and use it for Krishna. That is better than sannyas. Stick to your job and use it for Krishna consciousness. You are not a karmi." This is a letter to Gopal Krishna. So the work that we do has nothing to do with material world and fruitive results. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, advises Arjuna that the Vedas mainly deal with the karma kanda, getting a better future life. But he advises to rise above these modes and just serve Krishna unfailingly in whatever position you're in. And that's beyond sannyas, because the basic dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the regular phases for most people is to go through piety and then economic development, then to gratify one's desires, and when one is satiated fulfilling his desires, he's looking for liberation and takes sannyas. But that sannyas with looking for liberation is not pure motivation. It's something that still has some self-interest. So if I can find this Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada writes this, that actually if one takes sannyas simply with this interest of salvation, it's actually not pleasing to Krishna, even though he's, in one sense, he's renouncing and following a religious path in one way. Ultimately, Krishna says, sarva dharmam pratityagya, give up all types of religiosity, pious activities and expectations, and surrender unto me, and I will relieve you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So by this surrender to this understanding that we're eternally Krishna's servant, and by taking that humble position and begging for the mercy of Guru and Krishna, then amazing things can be accomplished. That in this war, there's always a war going on between the Devas and the Asuras. So in this Kali Yuga, there's so much disinformation, misinformation, there's so much propaganda towards material life just to fit into the machine so you can be exploited by those at the top. This has been going on forever. This is exploitation. There's the cheaters and the cheated. And this propaganda and this whole conditioning from our parents, from society, from college, everything, just trying to strive to get ahead to make some material headway. The forces of propaganda are very strong. But on the other hand, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the message of Srila Prabhupada in devotional service, that the actual source of happiness is within and comes from engaging in our natural position of serving the Supreme Lord. Bhagavad Gita mentions that the yogi is joyful within, active within, joyful within. He's very happy, and upon achieving the transcendental happiness, he understands and thinks that there is no greater gain. So this is the process of internal development, that we're not going to solve the problems of the material world. The problems of the material world are concomitant with material existence, that the solution is internal. The way that we'll become free from all these things is not to try and solve every single problem in the world, because those problems are endless. But one can become free internally by being dependent on the mercy of the Lord. And ultimately, Prabhupada writes that as one advances, as the mind is controlled, the supersoul is reached, and then one can take directions from the supersoul. So that's an advanced state. So in the meantime, we have the directions of our guru, Srila Prabhupada, that guides us in the way of spiritual development. And as in the offerings on Vyas Puja, Prabhupada's prayer was read, and he said, I feel myself the most unqualified, the most unfortunate. And he was totally dependent on, and genuinely, of course, he said that out of humility. But if we have that same humble mood, then Krishna is actually, and actually ultimately Guru, will give us the blessing to have the proper vision and engage us in the service that will actually please the heart. Otherwise, we're stuck, no matter what material position we may have. We're ultimately cursed if we don't understand that Krishna is the source of everything, the source of all happiness, that those fallible soldiers will not be able to protect us, no matter how powerful they appear to be. Any money, any bank balance, any wealth, these are all the same things, and intelligence. Anything that's material that's outside the realm of Krishna has no potency. In one of the key verses of the Bhagavatam, Krishna tells Lord Brahma, said, whatever appears to be of any value, if it has no relation to me, it has no reality. Know that to be my illusory energy. So in fighting this war, that we're all fighting this war, but our internal war with our mind and senses, and by getting the blessings of Guru, all potency will be there, all victory will be there. We just have to do our best and depend on Krishna for the result. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So any comments, anything else to add? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. You were mentioning that one should see the good in others. One should see the good in others.
One should see, good. One should see good?
Good in others.
See good in others, yes.
Yeah, you mentioned that. And obviously when you work in a large society or in a big group, there's always things that interactions happens that unavoidable. Sometimes maybe even a senior devotee do something. And then how will be the correct way or the right attitude for someone to, you know, like, do something, but at the same time not to commit the, how do you call the mariada? Vyatika krama. In other words, offenses, impertinently surpassing the superior. Sometimes we see that devotees overreact immediately. So my question to you will be, which will be the right attitude to correct something that might be wrong, but in my understanding, only a father or a guru or a leader can correct someone. If it's your peers, maybe you deal in a different way in order for not to commit offenses.
Okay. Sorry, excuse me. Sore legs here. I know that one time Srila Prabhupada was asking something of one of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, I think it was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's brother, who was, in a sense, his like his guru. But he had some, wasn't exactly a criticism, but he said, he asked him why something was going on, it was wrong. So he wasn't exactly confronting him, but he was asking him that this is wrong, why is this going on? So he asked him the question, why is this going on? Then later, Prabhupada told his disciples, he said, if one asks a question, states something in the form of a question, then there's no offense. So if one humbly asks another devotee about the issue at hand, then that's not considered offensive. On the other hand, it's better to, we were talking about this the other day, I think, with Banabhata, how just to, sometimes we just need to observe things that are going on and understand that maybe that's not the best, but rather than get into the mood of criticizing, just tolerate. Because as soon as we identify a fault in someone, that fault comes to us. So in a mood of brotherly, you know, concern, it's our duty in having loving relations to reveal our minds to others and have them reveal their minds to us. So I think it depends on the mood, how you approach it. And sometimes it's just, I know Srila Bhakti Siddhanta also said that if one thinks that he has to correct others, then he's actually the one that needs to be corrected, because there's already a mechanism in place for people to be corrected, which is the modes of material nature, that everyone has their own relationship with their guru, having their own experience. So that person will automatically get corrected over the course of time. And sometimes it's better just to observe, silently observe, and try and tolerate, because every endeavor is covered by fault. You see, in this world, people's actions, they can have their best intentions, but because of guna and karma, there may be some observable fault. But that will soon fade away. And I remember when living in the temple and as a brahmacharya in Laguna Beach a long time ago, there was a person who had come, he was actually an older devotee to me, but he had come and he was just a little, doing some just very inappropriate things and saying very inappropriate things. And I was a new bhakta and I was just thinking, well, you know, how can this be going on? But ultimately Krishna remedied the situation. And anyway, it was very it was very spectacular the way the person that was causing everybody grief in the temple, somebody else came up and confronted him, and then they got in a fight. They were rolling on the ground fighting, and then they both left. It was like problem solved. No one had to say or do anything. So somehow Krishna arranged this. Anyway, Bhrigavati Prabhu.
Jaivu, thank you for a very nice class on short notice. My question is this. In the purport, it was saying how Daiva, the strength from Daiva, is superior to Purusharka, was it?
Right.
Okay. So, say somebody comes to the temple, and they're just encouraged, young person, and they're just encouraged to be a sincere devotee, to chant 16 rounds, follow the four Golden principles, be fully engaged in service, don't worry about anything else. And along the lines of that thinking, that it's all they have to do. It's Daiva. You know, they're taking shelter of Daiva by doing that. But then some people raise the accusation. They say, well, you know, that's not fair. That's not right, because we could see that hardly anybody makes it in ashram life over a very long period of time. You know, they want to get married. That something happens, and then when that point comes, then they're just they're starting from scratch. You know, they're going to be starting from scratch, and that's not fair, you know, because they've just put all this time in it. So we should, right from the get-go, they should be prepared. You know, we should be doing something, you know, preparing them mentally that you're not going to be able to do this for really longer. This is what's going on. Most likely you're going to have to go back out there again, or putting something, some, you know, fund aside for them. Some people think like that. I'd just like to hear what your feeling is about that. I mean, is it still relevant? Are we doing the right thing by encouraging young people to just come here and fully surrender to Krishna, just fully take shelter of the process, the philosophy, the ISKCON way of life? Or are we doing them a disservice? Because, I mean, as I said, honestly, there are actually honestly some people out there that feel that we are, by encouraging them along those lines. But the question's clear?
Yeah, I think... Well, it's probably a case-by-case situation. If a person's young and feels that they want to have the full effect of Krishna consciousness, or whether they're older and living outside, everyone should be encouraged to engage as much according to their propensity. I know when I was first coming here, I was 18, I just graduated from, ended up high school, and I was already enrolled to go in college. And I asked Karinder, and I'd seen Prabhupada, and I started following the principles, and so I asked him, I said, well, you know, what should I do? He said, you can go to college and still get your education and still follow the principles and chant and still be a devotee. There's no restriction like that. You can live outside, you can live inside, and it just depends on each individual situation and what their desires are. I think the more information one has going in to make those choices, the better. Of course, after 10 weeks of being in college and realizing that it wasn't really a very good education, I joined the temple and wanted to have the full effect of Prabhupada's, you know, mercy. But again, it depends on the person. Traditionally in India, the sannyasis and brahmacharis lived in the temples. And the grihasthas would live outside, and they would come, and they'd be a part of the community. When Prabhupada came, he basically asked all of his grihasthas to live like sannyasis and be full-time dedicated. So in that, there's no loss, you know, that people will, you know, get what they desire and what they deserve. So it's a good question. I think people have to be counseled that these are your options, that if you're thinking down the road that you want to get married, the main thing is to chant Hare Krishna, follow the principles. If you live close to the devotees, that's always best. And any training that you can get in as far as brahmachari life or being completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that's your eternal benefit. Because what benefit is if we do our duties perfectly but don't become Krishna conscious? There's some type of balance there. And I know what you mean. Some devotees feel like I spent so much time at the temple, now by circumstance I'm kind of on my own, and now where do I go? So I think a devotee just has to depend on Krishna at that time. If you've been trained properly, you just have to say, well, this is my situation. Krishna will always take care of me. And the service that I did is to my, there's eternal benefit. So I think case by case, people should just be advised as to all their options and to follow as closely as they can and get as much good sangha as they can, and then Krishna will take care of them. I mean, that's the best I have. So Vas maybe has a better answer.
We should just realize that Krishna wants to deliver all conditioned souls in the material world. That's really what Krishna wants. And that's what Srila Prabhupada has preached. And we as devotees that are living in the temple, we should realize that. I mean, we should have that realization and determination. So we indiscriminately go out and we try to give that mercy to all the conditioned souls by prasadam, by harinam, book distribution, whatever means that are available. We try to go out there and give a conditioned soul an opportunity to come in contact with Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada even said there's a Brahman on every corner. So that means that the conditioned souls are ready, but we have to go out and we have to present this Krishna consciousness. Some are going to take it up very sincerely and want to move into a place where they can practice it 24 hours a day. That's the purpose of the temple. We here at the temple have to use some discrimination. We have to be able to discriminate those individuals that are qualified or capable of rising early in the morning, chanting 16 rounds, you know, following the four regulative principles, doing menial service to the Supreme Lord, and they're happy, and they're developing brahminical qualities. If individuals like that are not developing those qualities, then naturally they may have to do some other work. But not that they don't have a chance to become a devotee. They just have to do other work. They're not desiring to be in an ashram or in the association of devotees full time. Maybe they have some other, you know, desires to fulfill. But for us in a temple, we should be just completely absorbed in trying to save and all the conditioned souls, and without discrimination. Discrimination comes when we actually see them in the temple and they're not capable of managing this type of lifestyle. And then that way we encourage them to continue on chanting and as much as they can do. And those that are like less than human, we just give them prasadam. Just give them prasadam and let them eat Krishna sanctified food. And that'll actually save them.
Yeah, everyone, I think that... Another comment? I was just going to say that understanding and maybe implementing is a different thing, but understanding the Vanarashram system, there are different types of mentality. Some people are suited to be inside. Some people are suited to be nearby. Some people will get benefit just by supporting what the devotees do mentally, but they're not able. They're not capable. As Subhas Prabhu says, everyone has different levels. So we want to encourage everyone.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a magnificent class. I just wanted to comment on some of the discussion that was going on after Sachi Chinoy's question. First of all, we have to remember that Srila Prabhupada, he's the Acharya, and he's always teaching by example. So by his example, he's actually showing us the correct way to properly do things. And I'm not criticizing you, but after you made the comment about the way that Srila Prabhupada handled the situation, you said, better than that is what Vanavata and I were discussing, that someone should be tolerant in any situation. But, of course, we always have to be tolerant, but at the same time, we can't let things get out of hand. You know, somebody's doing something which he shouldn't be doing. You know, he's, you know, making devotees feel uncomfortable, like the example you gave. It may have been better that he was corrected by asking him a question, you know, why are you doing this? Instead of it getting to the point where two devotees are fighting and they both leave the temple. I mean, I don't think that's the desired result. Like Suvas said, we want to save all conditioned souls, especially those who actually come to the temple. They're special souls. Anyone that comes to the temple is obviously getting the mercy of Krishna to a very large degree, because how many people out of the, you know, 6 or 7 billion people on this earth actually come to a Krishna temple? And someone who's actually, you know, living in a Krishna temple, they should be given the most opportunity to actually advance in devotional service. And so if we can actually very intelligently and creatively, you know, correct somebody, I think it's better than tolerating and letting things, you know, progress to a point of, you know, getting fried and leaving the temple.
I think if there's good communication, that's, and it's done in a loving mood, that devotees revealing their mind to each other is fruitful. I think that, so I said, I think sometimes it's better. Like Prabhupada would ask a question. I didn't mean to think that saying that anything is better than what Prabhupada said. But it's also a delicate, it depends on who you're talking to. You know, that like with our God brothers, sometimes it's not, sometimes I feel it's not, I'm not their spiritual master, and I don't, sometimes I don't need to impose my view on others. That everyone has free will. Everyone has the right to do devotional service according to their understanding. And sometimes it's good to talk and correct, and sometimes it's good not to. Sometimes it's good just to observe. That's my own experience. But and I think it's, if something can be avoided and talked out, and devotees exchange in a loving mood, reveal their mind, and hear what that person has to say, that communication is always good if the mood is proper. So I think it just depends on the situation.
That's, yeah, thank you. That's a perfect answer. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Very good. So, can I give you this?